All right, so get that. We're going deep today, like seriously deep into redaction criticism of the gospel.
Oh, exciting.
I know, right? You've been exploring these texts already, and I bet you've noticed something. It's like each gospel writer has their own spin on the Jesus story.
It's true.
That's where this redaction criticism comes in. Think of it as like figuring out what the director was thinking when they made their movie. It's like, okay, why this scene? Why that camera angle?
Yeah.
You know? It helps us get into the head of the gospel writers and see what they were trying to emphasize.
Yeah, totally. And what's cool is that it shows us that they weren't just writing down facts. They were, like, crafting narratives. Like you said, it's like a director making choices about how to tell the story in the most powerful way.
It's kind of mind-blowing when you realize that, right? So instead of trying to, like, smash all the gospels together into one big, perfect, super smooth story.
Right.
We could actually learn a lot from those differences, you know? It's like getting four different perspectives on the same amazing event.
Absolutely. And that's what gets me so excited about this stuff. Like, take Matthew, for example.
Okay, Matthew.
He really wanted to show how Jesus was, like, the fulfillment of all those Old Testament prophecies.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Huh. Matthew was writing for a Jewish audience, right?
Exactly.
So he was showing them how Jesus fit into their history and their scriptures.
Yes. It's like he's saying, look, everything you've been reading about, it all leads to Jesus.
Wow. I never thought about it like that.
He even compares Jesus to Moses a couple times. Remember how Moses led his people out of Egypt? Well, Matthew's kind of doing the same thing with Jesus, showing how he's leading his people to a whole new kind of freedom.
That's a cool connection. So each gospel writer has their own special emphasis.
Yeah, for sure. Like Mark.
Okay, Mark. What about him?
Oh, Mark's gospel is like watching a total action movie. Everything happens so fast, and it's all about showcasing Jesus's power.
Yeah, Mark's gospel is definitely the most like, bam, bam, bam. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And he's always kind of asking this question, like, who is this guy? Hmm. And the answer unfolds through all these crazy miracles and teachings.
It's like he's building up the suspense. Ooh. You're on the edge of your seat waiting to see what Jesus is going to do next.
Totally. And then you've got Luke. He's a bit more of a historian, you know?
Yeah, Luke definitely seems to care about getting all the details right.
Totally. He goes way back with Jesus's family tree, even. And he really highlights all the eyewitness accounts. It's like he wants us to know that this stuff really happened.
So Luke's like, this is the real deal, folks.
Yeah.
You can trust me.
Yeah. And he's also super concerned with showing how Jesus cared for people who were struggling or left out.
Mm-hmm.
He really wants us to see that Jesus's message was for everyone, no matter who they are.
Right. It's like Luke is saying, hey, this good news is for you and you and you.
Exactly. And then you have John. Now his gospel is kind of in a league of its own.
Yeah, it's a lot more, I don't know, symbolic maybe.
Right. Less about what Jesus did and more about who he was. You know, like, what does it mean that he's the Son of God? John's gospel goes deep.
Yeah, it definitely feels like John is taking us behind the scenes, you know, like he's giving us this insider's view of Jesus's relationship with God. It's pretty amazing.
It is. But here's a question for you. How did we even get to this point? How did people figure out that the gospel writers were, like, making these deliberate choices in how they told the story?
That is a good question.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's a lot of scholarly debate surrounding these texts, right? Like, everyone's trying to figure out what happened and how it all fits together.
Yeah, there's a ton. And one of the big mysteries is called the synoptic problem.
The synoptic problem. That sounds intimidating.
It's really just about the fact that Matthew, Mark, and Luke have so much in common, but also some really interesting differences.
Right. They're all telling the same story, but each one has their own flavor.
Exactly. And for centuries, scholars have been trying to crack the code. You know, like, how do these three gospels relate to each other? What are the sources they were working with?
Ah, so it's like a literary puzzle.
Totally. And for a long time, the focus was on trying to find some lost source material that all three of them might have used. Some scholars even gave it a name, Q.
Q.
Yeah, like Quelle, the German word for source. They figured there must have been some other document out there that Matthew and Luke were drawing from, besides Mark's gospel.
Okay, so then what happened? How did we go from Q to redaction criticism?
Well, around the mid-20th century, scholars started asking a different question. What did each gospel writer DO with those sources? That's when redaction criticism really took off. Instead of just focusing on the sources themselves, scholars started paying attention to how each writer shaped and edited the material to fit their own purposes.
So it's like realizing that the director's choices are just as important as the raw footage itself.
Bingo!
Okay.
And that shift in thinking totally changed how we understand the Gospels. It's like we're looking at them with fresh eyes, you know? We're seeing them not just as historical records, but as carefully crafted works of literature.
That is super interesting. So who were some of the key players in all of this? I see a few names in my notes here. Reed, Bultmann, Lightfoot.
Yeah, those guys were some of the pioneers. But things really started heating up after World War II with a bunch of German scholars who really got into the nitty-gritty of this whole redaction criticism thing. They started dissecting each gospel, looking for clues about the writer's choices and their theological goals.
So they were like detectives piecing together a puzzle to uncover the hidden messages in the text.
Exactly. And one of their big breakthroughs was the idea of the Sitzen Leben.
Sitzen Leben. Okay, that's another one of those academic terms that sounds a little scary.
Don't worry. It's actually pretty simple. It basically means life setting. The idea is that each gospel writer wasn't just floating in some abstract void. They were real people living in real historical situations. And those situations definitely influenced how they saw and presented Jesus.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Like, understanding a director's background helps you appreciate their artistic choices.
Exactly. Knowing the writer's audience, their concerns, the challenges they were facing, it all adds up to a richer understanding of why they wrote what they wrote.
So it's like context is key.
Totally.
Okay, I'm starting to see how this Sitzen Leben thing is like a secret decoder ring for the Gospels.
Right, and it opens up a whole new way of reading these texts, but there's so much more to uncover.
Well, good thing this is just part one. There's a lot more digging to do, and I'm excited to keep going.
Me too. This is going to be good.
This Sitzen Leben thing, it's like, whoa, it really helps us understand why each writer might have chosen to tell the story in their own way. You know, like why they emphasize certain things.
Yeah, it's a really useful tool, no doubt. But there's more to it than just Sitzen Leben, you know, redaction criticism. It's all about understanding those specific choices that each writer made. And that means we got to do a little detective work.
Okay, I'm in. What do we do?
Well, first things first, you got to compare each gospel to its parallels in the other gospels.
Okay, so like, let's say we're looking at Matthew.
Right, Matthew. So you'd compare his account of, say, a miracle or a parable to how Mark and Luke tell the same story. You're looking for any little differences, anything that stands out. Maybe they add something. Maybe they leave something out. Maybe they use different words to describe the same thing. It's those tiny variations that can tell us a lot.
Gotcha. So we find some differences. How do we know they were like deliberate choices by the writer? Maybe they just remembered things a little differently, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's where the real detective work comes in. It's not always easy to tell, but there are some clues you can look for. For example, does the writer consistently use certain words or phrases? Like maybe they're always talking about Jesus's authority or his compassion. That could point to a particular theological emphasis. Or maybe they rearrange the order of events in a way that highlights a specific point.
So it's like they're leaving us little hints, these breadcrumbs that lead us to their unique perspective.
Yeah, exactly. And once you start seeing those breadcrumbs, it's like this whole new world opens up, you know? You can start to put together the pieces of their Sitzen Leben, their historical and theological context.
It makes me wonder, like, what kind of stuff were these writers concerned about? What was going on in their communities that might have shaped their writing?
Well, that's what makes this so fascinating. Each gospel gives us this little window into a different time and place in the early church. Take Matthew, for example.
Okay, Matthew.
He was writing for a Jewish Christian community, a group of people who are trying to figure out how their Jewish heritage fit with their newfound faith in Jesus.
So they were kind of caught in the middle, right?
Yeah.
Between two worlds.
Exactly. And Matthew wanted to show them how Jesus was the fulfillment of their hopes and expectations, the one they had been waiting for all along.
So he was building a bridge between their past and their present, their Jewish identity and their Christian faith.
Exactly. And then you have Mark, who was writing for a community facing some serious persecution.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, things were getting rough for them. And his gospel is just full of this energy, this urgency, you know?
Right. Like we were saying earlier, it's like an action movie.
Totally. He's really emphasizing the power and authority of Jesus, like a source of strength and encouragement for his followers who are going through some hard times.
It's like he's saying, hey, don't give up. Jesus has got your back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then there's Luke, who was writing for a much more diverse audience, lots of Gentiles, people from all sorts of different backgrounds.
So not just Jewish folks anymore.
Right. It was becoming this much bigger, more inclusive movement. And Luke really wanted to emphasize the universal appeal of Jesus's message. He wanted to show that this good news was for everyone, regardless of their ethnicity or social status.
So Luke's like, come one, come all.
That's a great way to put it. And then, of course, you have John. Now, John's gospel, it's kind of a different animal altogether.
Yeah, John always feels like he's operating on a whole other level.
He is. John's gospel is full of symbolism and poetic language. It's like he's writing for an audience that already knows the basic story of Jesus, and now he wants to take them deeper, explore the mystery and the meaning of who Jesus really is.
So he's not so much concerned with the historical details. It's more about the theological depth, right?
Right. It's like he's saying, okay, you know the story, but do you really understand the significance? Do you see the cosmic implications?
That's pretty mind-blowing.
It is. And that's why redaction criticism is so powerful. It helps us appreciate the richness and diversity of these texts. It's not just four versions of the same story. It's four unique portraits of Jesus, each one painted from a different angle.
You know, it's funny. I used to get so hung up on trying to make all the gospels fit together perfectly.
Oh, I know that feeling. Like every little difference felt like a problem.
But now I'm starting to see that those differences might actually be the most interesting part.
Exactly. It's not about finding the one right gospel or ironing out all the wrinkles. It's about embracing the complexity and letting those differences challenge and enrich our understanding of Jesus.
This is blowing my mind. But I gotta ask, if the gospel writers were making these choices, shaping their accounts to emphasize certain points, does that mean we can't trust them to be historically accurate? Like, how much of this is just their interpretation?
That's a great question, and it's one that scholars have been wrestling with for a long time. But here's the thing. Just because they had a perspective doesn't mean they were making things up or twisting the truth. They were still working with historical traditions, eyewitness accounts, and their own personal experiences of Jesus.
So they were trying to be faithful to what they knew, but they were also trying to communicate a specific message to their audience.
Exactly. Think of it like this. You and I could witness the same event and tell the story a little differently, right? We might focus on different details or emphasize different aspects of what happened, but that doesn't mean either one of us is lying. We're just bringing our own perspectives to the table.
Okay, that makes sense. So it's more about understanding their lens, their unique way of seeing and telling the story, rather than assuming they're just making stuff up.
Right. It's about recognizing that they're not just neutral reporters, they're also interpreters. They're trying to help their audience understand the meaning and significance of Jesus.
Okay, so redaction criticism helps us understand the how of the Gospels, like how they were written and why. But what about the what? Can we still trust the basic facts of the story?
That's the million-dollar question, and it's one that we'll be digging into more deeply in our next deep dive.
All right, cliffhanger. Guess we'll have to wait for part three. This is getting good.
Oh, yeah, we're just getting started.
It's amazing how much my view of the Gospels has changed just from this conversation, you know? Before, I would have been, like, stressing out trying to explain every little difference between them. Like, it was some kind of problem to solve.
Yeah, I totally get that. It's easy to get caught up in the details.
But now I'm seeing it differently. It's like those differences, those variations, they're actually pointing to something deeper, something more meaningful.
It's like a light bulb moment, right? Instead of seeing contradictions, you start to see these layers of meaning. Like, each writer is showing us a different facet of the same, like, beautiful jewel.
That's a great way to put it. It makes you want to, like, keep digging, you know?
Yeah.
Explore those nuances, see what treasures you can find.
Exactly. So, thinking practically, when you sit down to read a gospel now, how do you think redaction criticism can help you?
Well, for one thing, it makes me a much more active reader. Before, I would just kind of, I don't know, passively take in the words. But now I'm like, wait a minute, why did the writer choose to include this detail? What are they trying to highlight here? What's the point they're trying to make?
Yeah. It's like you're having a conversation with the writer trying to understand their perspective.
It's like becoming a detective for the deeper meaning.
I love that. And it's also important to remember that each gospel has a unique purpose and audience. Matthew's writing to a Jewish audience. Mark's writing to a community facing persecution. Luke's writing to a more Gentile audience. Understanding their Sitz im Leben can really unlock so much.
It's like thinking back to what you said about Mark's gospel being like an action movie. That makes so much more sense now. Knowing that his audience was going through some really tough times, they needed a message of hope, of power, of resilience.
Exactly. And it also helps you avoid that trap of trying to harmonize away the differences, you know? Don't get so caught up in trying to make everything fit together perfectly that you miss the richness and the depth that each gospel has to offer.
It's like trying to force together pieces from different puzzles, you know what I mean?
Perfect analogy. Embrace the variations. Let those differences challenge and broaden your understanding of Jesus.
And what was that last takeaway you mentioned? I remember it had something to do with how we view the Gospels overall.
Oh, right. Redaction criticism reminds us that the Gospels aren't just dry historical accounts. They're powerful narratives, stories that are meant to draw us in and bring us closer to Jesus. These writers weren't just reporting facts. They were sharing their faith, their passion, their understanding of who Jesus was and what he meant for the world.
So they're sharing their own personal director's cut of the Jesus story.
Exactly.
And that makes me think, what about our own lives? What's our director's cut? What are the key scenes, the turning points, the moments that define who we are?
Wow, that's a really powerful question to consider. And it's a testament to how relevant these ancient texts still are today, you know? They're not just about some guy who lived 2,000 years ago. They're about us, about our own journeys, our own choices, the stories we tell ourselves, and the world.
Well, this deep dive has been amazing. Honestly, I feel like I have a whole new perspective on the Gospels now, thanks to you.
It's been a joy to explore this with you. And remember, this is just the beginning. There's so much more to discover in the Gospels and in the world of redaction criticism. Keep digging deeper, keep asking questions, and keep letting these ancient texts challenge and inspire you.
You got it. And to everyone listening, thanks for joining us on this journey. We'll see you next time for another deep dive. Until then, keep exploring.